Have you ever wondered how some people became successful entrepreneurs? Was it pure luck, just the right timing, or is there a science behind how expert entrepreneurs think and make decisions? In today's episode, we will answer these questions and many more, because we are going to talk about effectuation, the science of entrepreneurial thinking. Effectuation, as a concept, began to take shape in the late 90s when Dr. Sara Sarasvati, a professor at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, started her groundbreaking research on entrepreneurial expertise. Dr. Sarasvati was intrigued by how successful entrepreneurs make decisions and navigate the unpredictable terrains of business. Her curiosity led her to conduct extensive studies and interviews with experienced entrepreneurs, aiming to decode the cognitive processes behind their success. Curious enough? Stay with us throughout the entire episode as we dive into the practical insights and applications of effectuation. Welcome to Change That Works, a podcast by ICG about change, leadership, and innovation that takes you behind the scenes. Today's host will be Alexandra Popescu-Zorica. My guest today is Michael Faschenbauer, ICG Managing Partner, Consultant, and Author. Michael has written influential work on effectuation, including the award-winning book, Effectuation, How Successful Entrepreneurs Think, Decide, and Act. And in the last two decades, Michael has been a pioneer in bringing the principles of effectuation to Europe and into consulting, which makes him a leading voice in this field and my number one choice for our podcast today. Hello, Michael, and welcome.
Hi, Alexandra. Thanks for having me.
It's a really pleasure. And I cannot say enough how grateful I am for our conversation today. Not only that I am also passionate about effectuation, but many of the things that I know today come from your guidance and your work. So you can consider this as a way of me saying thank you for all your work and your passion.
Well, I'm very happy you invited me. And as you might know, I love to talk about my favorite topic, which happens to be effectuation.
I will start with the first question, Michael. How did you first come across the concept of effectuation?
Depends of if you want the short or the long story. Yeah, I'll try to condense the long one.
Yes, please.
I used to work in a corporate environment, close to innovation as a product manager, later program manager. And very often the job was to get permission to act in the organization for something new. And usually the question by the management was, did you do the homework already? And homework meant, do you know what exactly you want to do? Is there a market for it? What do we need to invest to maybe in 2, 3, 4 years, get the benefits out of this? Yeah? And everybody with practical experience knows, you can't really do that homework in the beginning if there's just a glimpse in the eyes of people. So you have three options. One would be to let this interesting thing go because you can't plan it yet. Or you could start something in the underground and after 1 year maybe say, ha, we got something now. Or you could step in front of everybody with a couple of PowerPoints and say, this is going to be the bright future, knowing that nobody can falsify this at this point. And hoping that nobody will remember who provided those quote facts in the beginning to get a license to act. This always felt kind of strange to me. When I, several years later, by accident, in a university class on opportunity recognition, heard about the work of cognitive science about entrepreneurial thinking, this was the moment where a lot of lights came up in my head. And I thought there is something you could do in those situations where you can't plan, which is actually very structured and very professional and would have helped a lot in those corporate situations early on.
So bringing a bit of the entrepreneurial spirit into the corporate environment, that's what you're saying.
This is something that's of high interest to me because this is where I'm coming from. But looking at effectuation as a subject, as a theory, as a body of knowledge, it's something coming from researching so-called expert entrepreneurs. So people who have loads of experiences with bringing something new into the world as an entrepreneur.
So it's very tangible and it's something scientific, something backed that you can promote into the organizations. Because I remember that also when working with innovation, the feeling around innovation was that it never produced results and it was so intangible. You cannot touch innovation and what's happening in that environment. And of course, there was always this PowerPoint and business case that was asked for the innovation team. And so in a way, all the projects that had a more daring horizon and ventured into the unknown were, you know, people were trying to get it to the incremental side and to the known environment. And for me, that's what was missing. I think it was the effectuation that was missing when I was working as head of innovation. I was not familiar with this concept. And I was always trying to sell this vision of a future that we don't know how it will look like. And I didn't have this tangible and scientific part to showcase. And sometimes, you know, it felt like telling people what we do, even to the board, to the executives, going into these very scientific definitions didn't make sense to them. And so sometimes I was thinking, okay, how would I explain this to a 15-year-old child or teenager, what I'm doing? How would we explain effectuation? How would we define effectuation for a 15-year-old child?
Okay. It's a very good question, since effectuation tends to very often be a complex concept. But actually, the idea is rather simple. It's like there would be two ways of cooking. Yeah? You can plan cooking. This is not effectuation. If you plan cooking, you think about what should be on the table. And once you know what should be on the table, you can pick a recipe, get your ingredients, start cooking. And in the end, you have on your table exactly what you planned for. And effectuation would be you start with your case for action, which might be you're hungry. Then you next walk to your fridge. Look what you have, compare this with what you like, what you can do, your skills. Maybe also who wants to cook with you and what those people's preferences are and what they bring to the table. And then you start co-creating with what you have. And this will be effectuation.
Okay. I will tell my family that when I'm in the kitchen, I'm effectuating actually. Okay. I would like to get a bit more practical and maybe go into an example. You have a lot of experience working with effectuation and not only with startups and entrepreneurs, but also with bigger companies. And maybe share for our listeners a practical example. How does an effectuation project or work develop into a corporate setting?
Okay. See, effectuation is something for individuals in the organization, for individuals and looking at how they could perceive the environment, see cases for action, and start acting upon those. So in typical projects, imagine a technology company, which, for example, has a strategic ambition to boost sustainability throughout the organization. What you could do is you could do design thinking projects or try to invite the right people to figure out a few projects to foster sustainability. In an effectuation project, we would invite whoever wants to come to the table and do something like we call this market of makers, where we just have the strategic ambition, a couple of guardrails, a couple of things like what's intended, what's not intended, what's this room of possibilities for individuals in the company to start acting. And then we'd have them look at their own means, look at their own personal cases for action, and would have them start speedboats and trying to get others in the organization on board, trying to get those on speed. And over some time, in such a regatta in the organization, several speedboats would encounter difficulties, come back to the harbor. Some others might transform along the way by getting crew on board who have new ideas, also means on board and things on board that can help shape those speedboats. And after maybe 2 or 3 months, we could look at this regatta and we could look at which of those things that are thinkable are part of the outcome, which of the things were not thinkable at the beginning, yeah, but just a result of people acting upon the future and doing something, connecting with others, were the result, which ones can now really be turned into an innovation project, for example. So that's a typical project, yeah? Doing a market of makers, starting 50, 60, 70 speedboats with volunteers in the organization and transforming the outcomes in innovation projects.
It sounds like a revolution. How do you convince management or, I don't know, the CEO of a company to start such a regatta? 60, 70 people working on things that they consider important. You know, usually we are used to allocating people to projects that we consider strategic with very clear objectives, timeline, and expected outcomes. This is like backwards thinking. Mm-hmm. How do you sell it?
Talking to corporate managers. Nowadays, it's just easier than it was maybe 10 years or 15 years ago. Yeah? All of them have experiences with uncertainty, high levels of uncertainty. So they all have experiences based on sometimes you can't predict the outcomes. Sometimes the best outcomes come from the unexpected. Yeah? And if you follow through on that, you actually get to the conclusion that it doesn't make sense to do only those things where you think you can predict the outcome, because you miss out on all those occasions which would come up path dependent, depending on what people do and how they team up and everything. So there's a good logical reason for starting to control the future and shape the future without trying to predict it. And there's one important element included in effectuation, which also helps to convince, which is the concept of affordable loss. So the idea of what can we put at stake without risking head and neck. Mm-hmm. So it makes a lot of sense then to free up some spaces where also managers say, okay, if it in the end doesn't help us, it would for sure not hurt us. And this is the room where effectuators can start working in the organization.
What about the people? Are people in general excited to step into a regatta? Are they afraid? How is this perceived on the level of employees?
Well, as soon as you enter the company door in the morning as an employee, yeah, you kind of step also into your persona, which is very causal in terms of they are entering the grounds where prediction and planning are the basis for almost everything. On the other hand, when people look at their private life, how they shape their own future, if you ask them, are you results of goals you set and planning, or are you today the result of opportunities taken and coincidence and leveraging contingencies and doors opening, doors closing? Most people have experience with those non-predictive ways of controlling their own life. So for some of the people, it feels like a relief to get a name for that, to get a concept for that, get some structure for that, and get a room to try that also in a corporate setting, which doesn't mean it's not a stretch. Usually it's a stretch for everybody, but it's also kind of a relief. What people over time find out, effectuating is not an excuse for not planning what is plannable.
What you can plan, you do have to plan and execute based on that planning. But you also, as an employee, have to learn a different way of thinking and doing things. So it's somehow switching between those two roles, right?
Well, it's actually really, it's like a different mode of operation in your brain, switching either prediction on, saying, okay, yeah, now I have a good basis that I can kind of predict the future. I can analyze my data and make wise decisions based on that. And switching prediction off in those situations where you see here planning doesn't help me.
Okay. We talked a bit and you said, Michael, a few concepts that affordable loss and the means of the employees. And I know that there are some principles in effectuation, how there are some strict principles we can all follow. And I would like you to elaborate a bit on those principles, because in your talk, you touched upon each one of them. But maybe to make it clear for our listeners, how is the effectuation process structured?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense to talk about the principles. It's actually four principles. And those effectuation principles, the principles of controlling without predicting the future, also have an opposite. Each one has a planning opposite. So if the planning principle would be start with your goals, and once you are clear about the goals, then think about how to act upon those goals. The corresponding effectuation principle would say start with your bird in hand. Start with who you are, what you know, and whom you know, and what else you have under your control, and try to achieve outcomes based on what you have. So you go from there. Bird in hand is one principle of effectuation. For the next principle, the planning correspondent would be expected return. This is when you, for example, write business plans and you do those hockey stick graphics about expected outcomes. And then you do only those projects with good expected outcomes. Once you realize that under high uncertainty, and this is always the case for something radically new, you can't really predict the outcome. You look at what you can control in those situations, which would be what you invest. So the principle is affordable loss, meaning you think about what would you be willing to lose? What can you put at stake in order to do something, try something, test something without risking head and neck? This would be number two. Let's go for number three now. The planning principle, the corresponding one would be good risk management. Keep coincidence and contingency out of your project. Have a plan B and everything. Yeah. And otherwise, you can't really make sure that you achieve your goal in time and in the desired quality. If you go the effectuation way, you'd say leverage contingency. So the principle is called lemonade principle, coming from this proverb, if life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Like a completely different look at failure, maybe, or also at contingency.
Even changing the scope of the project, we are not used to change a project while it's developing. We just need to see it through. But I see that in effectuation, it's okay to change if you discover something else.
Well, actually, it makes a lot of sense if you are after something new, after something novel, to look at what kind of good outcomes are actually achievable. Effectuation would mean to say, okay, I found something which I didn't look for, which has value, which is a good outcome. We got a very important fourth principle. I tend to think, along with this bird in hand or working with the means you have, it's also one of the two most important ones. It's called crazy quilt. And crazy quilt is a metaphor. If you think about how you put together your venture, something you're working on, in a planning fashion, you think of stakeholders like pieces of a puzzle. Like you think about, who do I need for this project? Who is my target group for this project? Who exactly do I need in terms of skills and employees maybe, and maybe other stakeholders around me that play a role in that puzzle? And once I drafted this puzzle and all its pieces, I try to find those pieces in real life and try to commit them to the project to get exactly the outcome I planned for. Effectuation means you start with not a piece of a puzzle, but maybe your means, which is more like a patch, maybe a patch of silk or something like that. This is what you have already in the idea of what you want to do. And with that, you go out and talk to others that might have other patches that might fit well with your patch. And whenever you find somebody who's willing to commit into your project, you kind of sew those patches together and patch by patch to get something that could be a crazy quilt, which is in the end a work of art or something really that has a value. And it turns out nobody really had the complete picture in the beginning. And this is the job of an effectuator, to get commitments from others that voluntarily contribute something to what you're doing.
I really love how you explained it and you made it so tangible, like we can imagine how it all unfolds. And after my work in the corporate, when I was working in innovation department, so you can say rather maybe entrepreneurial employees around myself, I went and started to work for 2 years with a startup. And I thought that I knew how things are going to develop in a startup and what I have to do. And it took me some time to adjust and to really enter into their mindset. When I started learning effectuation and to understand effectuation, it was surprising. But then again, I understood it's a science behind. But it was so surprising for me to understand what was happening in that startup was actually what effectuation says. And how those people were thinking, were deciding, were turning their business, which for me was uncomfortable. It was out of my comfort zone. It was actually the right way to do it. And it was their entrepreneurial way of doing. And although I stepped outside of that startup, I asked them if they've ever learned effectuation. So I was really curious that maybe they learned effectuation and they were doing it because they learned it. They said, no, I never heard of effectuation. And I started explaining it to them and they said, but this is how I naturally think about. And it's wonderful to see that effectuation is scientific and that people think the way that effectuation presents it. And they do generate results because there are startups that have a huge impact in the world. And the same way that the people, you know, think in a startup and develop their business, I truly believe that in the same manner, employees can do that for their organizations. But that might come with the cultural change. And I'm wondering from your experience, if you only do a effectuation project or a regatta, people want to try something differently. Is that enough to change a culture and to really shift an organization into this dual operating mode? Or does it take a bigger effort?
A couple of points I'd like to talk about with you along of this train of thoughts. Let's start with the startups maybe. Mm-hmm. If you look at 10 startups and take one step closer, you find those people within those startups. Some might effectuate, others might actually not because they don't know it or don't feel it as being professional. Yeah. So this is really something which is an expertise that developed with expert entrepreneurs, people who do multiple startups maybe, including successes and failures over their experience over a long period of time. If you look into the corporate world, if you look into a big organization, this organization is far beyond the point of a startup. Startups encounter loads of uncertainties, and many of them kind of evolve through effectuation processes. And they wish nothing more than becoming something like a grown-up. To become a grown-up, they need to implement those structures, maybe some hierarchy, also specialization in the organization, predicting outcomes, planning, and so on. So they develop into something that favors planning. And existing organizations, I think it's fair to say that the big majority of existing organizations, developed organizations, really favor planning as their operation system number one for a good reason, because most of the things that they're doing are plannable. And they kind of lose the ability to the people in the organization to effectuate. In those cases where planning does not work, being innovation, all those things where uncertainty comes into play because the environment changes radically and things like that. So effectuating in an organization is practicing this mode in a hostile environment, actually. Because all those systems in an organization, hierarchy, separating decisions from acting and not having something like a market where you can ask 50 people and need only one yes to be one step further or something like that, or everything that's culture dependent in organization, making good experiences with predicting all those day-to-day decisions and everything. Everything is a piece in learning that planning works. Now, when a few people in the organization remember this other mode or learn this other mode to cope with those situations where planning simply doesn't work, and also conceptualize this and make this purposeful, yeah, and think about this, this will not switch an organization around, but it will create experiences people can talk about. So this is the impact this can have in the organization then. So it's not changing the culture, switching the culture, it's widening the culture and making it more sensible for changing what's context dependent. It's like it goes back to this innovation notion you very well know, I guess, of ambidexterity, doing something which is rational depending on what context you enter.
Okay, so it's enlarging the culture. It's not changing it, but enriching it, enlarging it. So yeah, that more prepared to answer based on how the future unfolds, uncertainties that come around, and how we turn them into opportunities.
Yes, yes. And if those people would love to do this, if they find a friendly environment for that, because their bosses understand why this makes sense to switch modes in those situations and create context where they can do so. Yeah? This, again, has an impact on entrepreneurial culture or intrapreneurial culture in the organization.
Michael, I have three lightning questions for you now that we are, you know, closing our episode and we have a promise that we will not keep it too long. But I do have three lightning questions for you at the end. And the first one is, do entrepreneurial employees really exist?
My experience is they do in every organization. It's not easy for them in a lot of organizations, but you find people everywhere who tend to see cases for action and, regardless of their job description, have urge to simply act on those things. The people are there, yeah? And giving them the context to effectuate in the organization will benefit the organization.
My second question, expert entrepreneurs, are they born, made by the environment, or self-made?
Okay. Becoming an expert entrepreneur is really something that needs a lot of experience. Yeah? You might have a tendency on how much you like uncertainty and acting under uncertainty and acting without planning, but this is just a tendency. Spend 5 years in a university and learn how to really plan well in your, I don't know, marketing or management or something, education, yeah, and you will tend to think more causal and planning afterwards. Go afterwards to, I don't know, to a completely different country and build up maybe the first little subsidiary of your company somewhere in the jungle. Be faced with a lot of uncertainty. And 5 years later, you will have learned to effectuate much better again. So it's really a function of experience. With some, well, there's some preset, but I wouldn't say entrepreneurs are born.
Okay, that's a good news. So we don't need a lucky star to be born under a lucky star. Okay, and the last question for you, if you can share with us, if you have, I don't know, an entrepreneurial large organization that you personally admire, someone that's moved from causal and become more entrepreneurial, or it's been like that forever, is it an organization that you admire and why?
Okay, this one example of a company where I know it really fosters effectuating without knowing about the concept. I think it makes sense mentioning it because there's a lot written about it. This would be Gore and Associates, the ones who brought about Gore-Tex, which you might have close with, but they are present in a lot of different industries with different forms of using Teflon, PTFE. And in their company rules, for some reason, they have a lot of things that really foster effectuating, like small subsidiaries with all functions in each subsidiary to make sure that people can really get stakeholders on board from different disciplines, or like principles, like a water line principle saying, if you want to test something, do so if you can make sure that the hole in our ship won't be below the water line, but only above. Which sounds a lot like affordable loss, and a lot of other things which really favor effectuation in the organization. And you can see from the outcomes of the organization, it's one of the most innovative companies since, I don't know, 60 years now already.
Okay. Well, Michael, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you about effectuation, and you've shared a lot of insight. I'm sure we could have talked so much more. Tell us, where can people learn more about effectuation?
First of all, start with the internet. There's English-speaking effectuation.org. In the German-speaking countries, you'd turn to effectuation.at or DE to find a lot of resources and a lot of traces of my work, our work in that cases. There's a couple of books out there.
You wrote one?
Yes, which is in German language, unfortunately, but which is a practitioner's guide to effectuation usages beyond entrepreneurial usage, but also in corporate world and private life and career development and things like that. And well, of course, we within ICG, what we do is we do projects with effectuation-based projects on a regular basis with a couple of experts in the organization.
Good. So, whether you're starting a new venture or you're big company or just looking to innovate, there's a lot of resources where you guys can read about effectuation, and our colleagues at ICG are here to help you and actually help you leverage effectuation principles to achieve success in your business. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Change That Works seeks to inspire a different way to transform organizations. Let's tune in again for our next episode.